Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. With me in the studio are Spencer Rogers from North Carolina Sea Grant and Mike Giles of the Coastal Federation. We're talking about the possible impacts of sea level rise and how the state or individual communities should plan for it. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from you. 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using CoastlineHQR. And Spencer Rogers, you said we might have left some confusion on the time frame issue. We were talking about the 5-year versus the 30-year time frame, and 5 years is for what?
Yeah, the 5 years was very explicitly put into the recommendations of the science panel because we all agreed that we don't see an acceleration in the present tide records for North Carolina, so that we think it's reasonable to expect something in the future, but it doesn't show up yet. And that for that reason, we think a 5-year relook is very critical to make sure we identify when it starts to accelerate, if and when that happens sometime in the future. So that's different than the 30-year outlook for the predictions. We still think an accelerated elevation rate, no matter what time period you look at, is appropriate over the historical rate.
And you, taking a look at this, you said in a discussion with our producer that the kerfuffle or the sort of public outcry over the differences in the inches that we're talking about amounts to not very much in practice. Is that correct?
That's the case. Keep in mind, when looking at sea level rise, we're measuring tidal changes twice a day, on the order of 3 feet in the Virginia line and about 5 feet at the South Carolina line. Here in Wilmington, it's 4 feet on the ocean, a little bit more than that on the river. So we average that over a long period of time. And while you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand sea level rise, it actually helps a lot. The reason for that is about 80% of the tide change per day is caused by the moon, the gravity of the moon, and another 20% is caused by the sun. And there's about a 20-year, 19-year cycle that changes astrophysically that drives our tides. So if you want to look at what the tide is going to do in sea level over time, you've really got to look at least a 20-year record to get some functional measurement of what's happening. But when we put that into an annual increase and look at this very long-term measurement series, that the historical rate in the Outer Banks, where we've got the best oceanfront tidal records, has historically been about 2 nickels per year for the last 30 years or so.
And you're talking about nickels lying on top of each other.
Yeah, the thin part. One on stacked on top of the other, it's only 2 nickels thick per year is the historical rate of rise. And in the southern part of the state, it may be as low as 1 nickel a year if we can clean up some of our tide gauges down here. But what was missed, I think, entirely was that the 30-year accelerated rate that the science panel recommended went from 2 nickels per year to 3 nickels per year.
That you're talking, I just want to be clear, you're talking about the difference between 2 nickels stacked on top of each other and 3 nickels stacked on top of each other.
That's correct.
And that's what was so controversial.
Over 30 years, the controversy was over one thickness of a nickel.
And so, okay, that's quantifying it for us. I think most of us can imagine what that means, but it gets very confusing. The New York Times published a piece earlier this year about a new report showing accelerated rates of sea level rise along the East Coast. And the piece also contended that the ground itself is sinking in certain areas.
It is sinking at very rapid rates in certain areas, but it's also rebounding and going upward in other areas. And then the northern areas, Maine in particular, is rebounding from the last ice age and is actually going up. There are areas of Texas where they were extracting oil and gas that were going down at extremely rapid rates on the order of 8 feet per century over shorter periods of time. 8 feet of drop, which shows up as a relative increase in sea level rise. So because the land was dropping, anybody that built on that land would see a sea level rise rate of 8 feet per century. So land is going up and down depending on where you're sitting on the coast.
We're talking about sea level rise on coastline and how North Carolinians should be planning for it. Tell us what you think. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us, as Jessica did, using Coastline HQR. We have an email from Janet. She says, flooding along the coastline in the subject areas is an example we don't want to experience. It's not just a concern of homes, but also the toxic chemicals that are used in the industry located in potential flooding areas. Businesses must also prepare and adjust for the future. Mike Giles from the Coastal Federation, what are some of the ways that businesses should be preparing for this?
I think businesses should be preparing with their infrastructure, where they locate, where they withdraw their waters, where they put their waste, how they treat their waste. You know, if their waste treatment facilities are vulnerable to flooding or sea level rise, that needs to be taken into the long-range planning. The Coastal Federation is very vocal about certain industries. You have to have your head in the sand if you don't know about Titan Cement. And one of the concerns about that heavy industry on one of our rivers, long-term, their plan is long-term, is the effects of sea level rise and flooding on that facility.
And what do you think those effects could be? What is your group concerned about?
What they're talking about is digging a hole in our groundwater aquifer, not a well, a pipe, but a giant 1,000-acre opening into our aquifer, the Castle Hayne and PD aquifers, which could pose potential contamination and flooding and hurricane and storm events. Long-term sea level rise could have an impact on that hole in our aquifer.
343-1138 is the number to call if you have a comment about sea level rise and how it could affect North Carolina's coastal communities. Spencer Rogers, what's the timeline now? So there was this Coastal Management Policies Act passed in 2012. As part of the science panel that advises the Coastal Resources Commission, what can we expect in terms of developing public policy?
Well, the commission has asked the panel to switch from the 90-year projection into the future to a 30-year projection in the future, which makes our job a lot easier, and it makes the prediction more reliable, I think, in the long run. But again, it's only 30 years, and there are other things that require planning for much farther in the future. So for 30-year mortgages, 30-year oceanfront setbacks, that's a fairly commonly used number in lots of different regulatory areas, and our projections we expect will be a good fit at some of the things that are already being used.
And when can we actually expect to see an update that will go before the North Carolina General Assembly?
I'll leave that specific date to the commission, but we expect to get something to them within the next year.
So you're developing that update now?
That's correct. We started on it.
And there's a vetting process that's going to happen.
We will have it externally reviewed by other specialists in sea level rise from out of state. And then it will go to the commission with comments from each. And then it will go into public exposure and review.
So just taking a look at the, I saw that there are a couple of scientists who will be making comments on your draft. And are these the same scientists who published a report that found tide gauge records around the world to show that the rate of sea level rise appears to be decreasing?
Houston and Dean have published a number of different papers on looking at sea level rise. And you know, they're highly respected in almost everybody's book, we are quite comfortable with having them as reviewers.
Can you tell us more about that study? Mike Giles from the Coastal Federation, have you heard about this study? This is one of the things I was telling you off mic earlier. The more I delved into this topic, the more confused I got, because to then find that tide gauge records around the world show the rate of sea level rise appears to be decreasing, and yet at the top of the show you said we've established sea level rise as a factor. How does that...
The difference is that locally, you have to take into consideration the landform changes, and that we didn't look globally. We were directed to look at the North Carolina record, not at the international record. So in order to understand exactly what sea level rise is doing at any given community, you've got to know what the landform is using at the same time. And that requires a whole lot of effort beyond just looking at the tide gauge record. So we have the ability, we think, in the future, in this report anyway, to look more closely at our landform changes than we could in the previous study. And we think we can come up with something that will be completely acceptable to those two individuals.
And just to be clear, what is the difference between determining policy based on historical rates of sea level rise versus projections into the future?
Everybody on the science panel felt that because of other climate observations and other modelers and other predictions globally and internationally, that it's likely that some acceleration is going to happen in the future. And we didn't see that. We have not seen that in the North Carolina record so far in the last study. But we think it's likely to occur. So factoring in some recommended acceleration in sea level rise seems perfectly reasonable in the last study, and I expect it'll be included in the next study as well.
And there is a mandate, isn't there, that the final draft report to the Coastal Resources Commission will be delivered in March of next year? Do I have that time frame right?
That sounds about right.
Okay. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about sea level rise, the science, the controversy, how and whether North Carolinians should be planning for it. We have about 5 minutes left in the show, so if you'd like to give us a call, do that now at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And we have an email from Sabrina. She says, how does intensive groundwater withdrawal by Titan Cement, for example, and Mike Giles, this goes to what you were speaking to before, influence land subsidence and subsequently local sea level rise?
I think that the evidence as far as large withdrawals from our limestone aquifers has the potential to create sinkholes, drain wetlands, drain surface waters. As far as the effect on sea level rise, I can't speak to that because I'm not a geologist, but it's a fact that even with the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority withdrawal for their Nano water treatment plant, they have effects of drying out wetlands and sinkhole formations.
Yeah, in terms of the potential for groundwater withdrawal to cause some subsidence is there, but it's highly dependent on the sediments that the water is residing in. And the numbers I mentioned from Texas, for instance, are in some very soft sediments. So unlike the Castlehaine rock structure, that if you take the water out of a very soft mud, it's going to shrink a whole lot more than it would be out of a rock. And the types of subsidence that would be expected from the Castlehaine aquifer are quite different than some other soft sediment areas and much deeper extractions that go 1,000 feet deep, not 50 feet deep.
We just had a press release from the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management yesterday, and that is an agency part of the Department of the Interior, the federal government. Part of President Obama's continuing commitment to help coastal communities recover from Hurricane Sandy, which, as we know, pummeled the Northeast, and promote resilient coastal systems, BOEM, that's the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and East Carolina University signed a 2-year cooperative agreement to evaluate sand resources for coastal resilience and restoration planning. Is there a divergence between the federal government's approach to planning for this and the state government's approach?
I don't think so. That beach nourishment has been used for managing coastal erosion and the component of that that's driven by sea level rise for in North Carolina back to 1965 in Carolina Beach and Wrightsville Beach. The problem in sand sourcing for that has been that it was limited to the 3-mile limit, which is state jurisdiction, and anything beyond that required federal approval, which was lumped in with oil exploration and a lot of other things. It was much more complicated and environmentally risky. So what this has done is opened that up to wider exploration with some the similar standards that we're using already in the 3-mile limit.
There was an article published, I believe, by the Coastal Federation, Mike Giles, that said North Carolina is the only state to adopt the historical standard and ignore evidence of a more rapid rise. Every other state is planning on 3 feet of sea level rise or more. Delaware was cited as an example, planning for sea level rise up to 60 inches by the end of the century. Southeast Florida projecting a 9 to 24 inch rise by 2060. California preparing for a 55-inch rise. Spencer Rogers, are we in line with where we should be when it comes to planning and other states?
Well, give us a chance to write the report first. But we expect to include acceleration in what we recommend for planning purposes to the commission. So there will be some acceleration, I'm sure, included in that. And we have been explicitly asked for 30 years that doesn't mean you don't need a higher standard for something that's going to be around for a lot longer than that. So it doesn't exclude any larger numbers in the future. That means that you're comparing apples and oranges when you look at a century and conclusion versus one for 30 years. You can't directly compare.
That's this edition of Coastline. That's all the time we have. I'd like to thank our guests, Spencer Rogers of North Carolina Sea Grant and Mike Giles of the North Carolina Coastal Federation. Thanks to all of our listeners and those who called, emailed, and tweeted to join the conversation. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Join us next week when we take a closer look at downtown development in Wilmington, why its growth has been a tough nut to crack, promising developments, and the challenges that still exist. That's next week, Wednesday, August 13th at 2 p.m. here on WHQR 91.3 FM. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Ken Campbell. Associate producer is Lindsay McGrath. Our music editor is Bob Workman. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and our guests, and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio or our licensee, Friends of Public Radio, Incorporated. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.
The time is 2:59 and the Diane Rehm Show is just ahead on WHQR 91.3 FM.
Support for WHQR comes from our members and PNC Bank, working to achieve customers' financial goals, knowing that a community that works together thrives together. PNC, for the achiever in you. More information at pnc.com.
This is WHQR Wilmington 91.3 FM, Classical HD2, and WHQR.org, serving Myrtle Beach at 98.9 and Lumberton at 94.1, celebrating 30 years of public radio. Through the afternoon, partly cloudy, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high in the lower 90s today, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms into the evening, the low tonight in the lower 70s. The time is 3 o'clock.